Good morning. Hope you are doing well this morning. Get ready to enjoy some pretty days coming up. Lower humidity from what I've read. Praise the Lord, because it's been yucky. We're going to continue our series today called Unworthy, and this is the first series I'm doing as we study the book of Isaiah. And as I said in my prayer, today's kind of a tough message. This whole series is meant for us to examine our own lives and see where we fall short, and for us to see just how unworthy we are of knowing God, of loving God, of having a relationship with Him. And Isaiah 5 is where it starts to get pretty heavy, pretty hard, pretty convicting. And so my prayer today is that we will examine our own lives and see which one of these sins that we're going to be talking about are we struggling with the most. Isaiah 5, let me set it up for you. He is using a vineyard or a garden as the example here. And it's interesting that he's using a vineyard and garden because our leadership team had just discussed in our last leadership meeting that we are going to have a community garden next year here at the church. And so we part of the reason is our blessing box is getting hammered, and so this would be an easy way to provide extra healthier food for the blessing box, also something for our church to do together. And we've had a couple people in the congregation bring it up, and I'd already been thinking about it. So we're planning on building some raised beds here in the next probably month or two, and let them start settling in as we prepare to plant next year. In Isaiah 5, the vineyard or the garden, if you will say, is God's people, is Israel. And as we've talked about during this series, Isaiah is ministering to Judah in particular. So Isaiah chapter 5, verse 7 says, "For the vineyard of the Lord of armies is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah, the plant he delighted in." So I want you to think that picture of a plant, and the plant has branches, and the plant produces fruit. Now, if we start our garden next year, our goal is for our garden to produce good fruit, or good vegetables, or good, it's meant to produce something good. If it produces something bad, it's useless. I mean, we just wasted some money, we just wasted our time, we've wasted some water. I mean, we've wasted our time. Well, this is the situation that God is looking at Israel and Judah, and here's what he says in verse 4. He says, "What more could I have done for my vineyard than I did? Why, when I expected a yield of good grapes, did it yield worthless grapes?" The fruit that Judah and Israel are producing, and Jesus uses imagery to talk about us producing good fruit or bad fruit in the Gospels. And I think it kind of comes off of Isaiah 5 here. Isaiah 5 was written before that. So he talks about how we, as followers of him, should produce good fruit in our lives. And in John 15, he tells us that if we don't produce good fruit, that branch is cut off and thrown into the fire. Well, here, Judah is not producing good fruit. And so God has to decide, what am I going to do with this garden? Just like we would have to decide what to do with that garden if it doesn't produce good fruit. If it doesn't produce good fruit, we might do something with the people who are supposed to be taking care of it instead of the garden. But anyway, what do you do with a bad garden? You destroy it, or you just let it go. I'm sure we've all seen gardens that have just been let go. Weeds start to come up. Here's what Isaiah 5, 5-6 says. "I will tell you what I'm about to do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge, and it will be consumed." Hedge would have been the protection. He's saying, I'm removing the protection, and it will be consumed. "I will tear down its wall, and it will be trampled. I will make it a wasteland. It will not be pruned or weeded. Thorns and briars will grow up. I will also give orders to the clouds that rains should not fall on it." So in other words, he's saying, hey, you're producing bad fruit. Things are not going good, so I'm just letting you be. I'm taking away the protection I provided. The weeds are going to grow up. The thorns are going to grow up. The briars are going to grow up. And then because he's God, he can say, hey, no rain's going to fall on you. Now, symbolically, he is describing what literally happened to Israel and Judah, that they were taken over. The protection God was providing them from other countries was taken away. They were taken into captivity. They were taken over. And a lot of bad things happened to them. And this is exactly what Isaiah is foretelling. Now, the rest of Isaiah 5 is about the specific sins that they committed. So we're going to be jumping around in Isaiah 5, and we're going to be covering those specific sins. I am going to actually use Isaiah 5 as a jumping off point to talk about the seven deadly sins. Might be a term that you are familiar with. The seven deadly sins was created by a Christian monk in the 4th century. Initially, he identified 8 evil thoughts that lead into sin. And over time, that 8 was reduced to 7 when sadness, which was one of the original deadly sins, was worked into some of the others. And so now we have 7. The original Latin term for 7 deadly sins actually meant capital sins. And capital, in Latin, the root word that goes along with that, means head. And so what this is essentially saying is that these are the 7 head sins that lead into other sins. In other words, the bad fruit that we will be looking at in Isaiah 5 today, and we're going to be talking about some outside of Isaiah 5, the bad fruit can be traced back or characterized by one of these 7 sins. And so the imagery I want you to put in your head today is that you are a plant. And you are, as a plant produces fruit, you can either produce bad fruit or good fruit. And you have branches. These branches are going to represent one of these 7 deadly sins, or hopefully the opposite of them. And you produce fruit off of those branches. And you're going to see, we're going to have a really cool image for you on the screen here. The fruit that you produce can either be sin or consequences that come from one of those 7 deadly sins. And we're going to be looking at examples of that here in Isaiah 5. So let's cover them today, starting with Isaiah 5, starting in the second half of verse 7. It says, "The Lord expected justice, but saw injustice. He expected righteousness, but heard cries of despair." So he expected justice, and we talked a little bit about justice last week. Justice means that wrongs are being made right. But instead, he sees just a whole lot of wrong. Other translations actually will say that God expected justice, but he saw bloodshed instead, showing that God's people are not treating each other well. The next part says he expected righteousness or right living, but instead heard cries of despair. Why? Because they're living in sin. We talked about last week, the image there was when we sin, we are hurting ourselves. It's like we're stabbing ourselves and we're stabbing other people. Well, what God hears, instead of seeing righteousness, he hears cries of despair. I was trying to think maybe an example of when we heard cries of despair. 9/11, thought about 9/11. The videos we've seen, we've heard people cries of despair. I watched Saving Private Ryan again recently, and if you know how D-Day is portrayed in that, you hear people, men who are storming the beaches with cries of despair. In fact, Lieutenant John Spaulding said, he was there on D-Day, and he said men were yelling, screaming, bleeding, dying. You could hear guys crying out for their mothers, guys asking for water, guys just screaming in pain. And you wanted to help them, but if you stopped, you knew you were dead too. You know that has to play in their memory time and time again. And that's what God hears, is cries of despair. Why? Because they're hurting one another. And so what we're seeing here is that the first deadly sin we're going to talk about, which is wrath. And we're going to use a tree, and that tree, one branch, is going to be wrath. Wrath is when someone says, I want to hurt you. I want to hurt you. And often that is out of, and not even often, it is out of uncontrolled anger and hatred at the world, at a person. And listen, it's okay to get angry at times, and a lot of these sins that we're going to cover today, they come out of natural feelings, but it's when those things become uncontrolled is when they become an issue. And so when your anger becomes uncontrolled, you are going to be walking around with wrath, wanting to hurt people. And that's one reason why, talking about the fruit that comes from wrath, that's one reason why we have so much violence in the world today. There's a lot of people who are consumed with wrath. I think it's one reason why we see a lot of people take revenge. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You hit me, I hit back harder. We've seen that type of talk now with all the wars we have going on in the world. That kind of talk is happening. That kind of talk happens in the church and outside the church, just in generally. I think that our natural desire is to see revenge, but Jesus said, no, turn the other cheek. Part of wrath is seeking revenge. Another fruit of wrath is abuse. Unfortunately, we probably all know somebody that have been in a domestic violence situation. Unfortunately, it's becoming more common that there are kids who are being abused. Some of the stories I hear from our school system breaks my heart. A lot of that is rooted in wrath. A lot of that is rooted in someone who can't control their anger and they take it out on the most vulnerable people in their life. Just so that they feel powerful, so that they feel strong, so that they feel whatever it is. And this one kind of goes along with it too, cruelty. When I think of cruelty, I think of animal cruelty. And once again, animals are a vulnerable group. And people tend to take out their anger on the animals. Or if you saw the video that I posted yesterday, Sarah just runs from the animals. Or tries to run from the animals. Those of you who don't know, we went to Lazy Five Ranch yesterday, and if you've never been there, it's a great trip. They were letting teachers in free. And so we went again yesterday. We just went earlier in the month, or 2 months ago. And they take you up right to the giraffe enclosure, and the giraffes will come down and eat your food. Or that's what they're supposed to do anyway. Well, the giraffe that we met yesterday was not hungry. He just wanted Sarah. And Sarah did not want him. And so, I mean, he initially started at the head of the trailer and worked his way back, and he went right to Sarah, and Sarah wasn't having it. You know, if you watch the video on Facebook, she's screaming, she's scared, she's very embarrassed by the end of it, as she should be, and I'm very embarrassed by the end of it. But he kept coming back, and, you know, while she wouldn't do nothing, you'll hear me say in the video, just pet him. Like, just love on him, because that's all he was wanting. He's wanting his neck rubbed, and he's wanting his face rubbed. And he'd come right up to me, and there was times where I was like, man, this thing's strong. Like, I'm going to have to duck, or it's going to knock me over. And, he kept coming back. We stayed there for probably, I don't know, probably felt like 20 minutes to her, but it was probably five. And he just kept coming back for love, and he finally ate a little bit from my bucket as we were leaving. But some people treat animals badly. Some people take out their wrath on animals. And even in the United States, you know, we recognize that animal cruelty is a thing. But also, some people just treat other people cruelly. Some people treat their kids really bad. It's coming from wrath. I've seen uncontrolled anger ruin many people. I've seen them allow this branch, and maybe not this fruit in particular, but I've seen uncontrolled anger, which is wrath, ruin careers, ruin relationships, ruin marriages. I've seen it do a lot of damage. And so we need to examine ourselves. Hey, are we struggling with wrath in our life? Let's go to the next one. We're going to go to verse 8. Isaiah, or God, says here, "Woe to those who add house to house." Let me just stop there to talk about what woe means. Woe means more like how terrible for you, because judgment's coming. Woe to you, how terrible it is for you who add house to house and join field to field until there is no more room and you alone are left in the land. What does that mean? That means that there are people buying house after house after house. They are adding house to house. They are joining field to field. They're buying land. They're buying house to the point that Isaiah and God says here, there is no more room because you bought everything and you alone are left in the land. Listen, this is happening around here. This is happening in Randolph County, and this happens in the United States, where either rich people or corporations buy up a bunch of land and price out the common people from that land. And they keep buying houses when they don't need houses, and then they charge ridiculous amounts of money, and it's just a bad circle that's happening there. And so what that is driven by is greed, which is the second deadly sin. Greed says, I want more possessions. In this context, it is the desire for more houses, obviously money, obviously land, obviously material things. But greed is this constant desire for more. You are never content with what you have. You always want more money. You always want more possessions. You always want more this, this, and that. You value material things more than is healthy. It's okay if you value your car, but when you value your car more than you value God, there's something wrong there. When you value taking care of your car more than you value worshiping God in church, there's a problem there. That would be greed. And so let's talk about some things that come from greed. First one, I included stealing. And I think this happens on two levels. I think it happens, from my experience of Food Line, those that are poor can still be greedy, even if they don't have a lot of money. And they want the possession so badly that they are willing to steal. On the flip side, there are corporations and rich people who steal because they want more possessions. This one goes along with it, dishonesty. There definitely are those higher up in leadership in corporations and companies and places like that that choose to be dishonest just so that they get more money. And I'm thinking of a local organization in Asheboro that I'm not going to say. but you can read some news articles on our local hospital and the dishonesty there. Not that it's not the people, it's the owner that is struck by greed. Dishonesty. They're willing to be dishonest in order to make more money. Next, and this would be one we have to watch out for in particular, is materialism. Materialism is when you are desiring things more than you desire God. And this is, we are bombarded with commercials. We are bombarded with all this stuff of, you need this, you need this, you need this, you need this. And it makes that desire to have more things, but that is greed showing its ugly face. And we live in such a materialistic culture that people are willing to spend money they don't have to to get what they don't need. That is greed showing its face. And then the last one is oppression. This is when someone is so hungry for money that they're willing to knock down other people to make it. They're willing to they're willing for you to suffer for them to make more. Now, I am not a conspiracy theorist, but I think our world is ran on money. And I think some of these cancers and stuff probably could have been solved by now if there wasn't so much money in cancer treatments and other health treatments. I think our health care, I think they could charge less for prescriptions, but they choose instead to charge more so that they, greedy in themselves, make more money. Same thing with insurance companies. I'm pretty sure there was a CEO of an insurance company that was murdered because of the greediness that was in display in that company. Now, I'm not saying we go and murder them, because that would be the wrath part coming out, you know. But I am saying greed. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. I do think our world is driven a little bit by that. I think the wars that we are seeing is driven by money. You know, people make a lot of money during war, and then the common person suffers a lot during war. I think COVID could have been driven a little bit by money, because fear makes a lot of money as well. And so, anyway, off my soapbox. Greed. I'm going to list another deadly sin here in relation to adding the house to house and adding the land to land, and that one's going to be envy. Envy is similar to jealousy. It is, I see what someone else has, and I want it. So I want what you have. What's interesting about envy is it can show its way in, I want what you have, so I'm going to take what you have. Or, I want what you have, and if I can't have it, you can't have it either, and I'm hoping for your downfall. And either one is wrong. And you can be envious of what someone else has, you know, with their house, their car, some type of material thing, but also just simply their success, their positions in life, their happiness. Anything good, you can look at it and say, I want what you have, but you can also say, I don't want you to have it. Greed and envy are similar in that greed seeks to acquire what another has, but envy is a little darker. It doesn't just want the good for itself. It wants to make sure that other people don't have it either. So let's talk about some of the fruit that you could see from envy. The first one is resentment. You resent that someone else is successful. You resent that someone else is receiving praise. You resent that someone else is experiencing good in their life. You develop this sense of bitterness because of what someone else is experiencing. Next one would be gossip. Gossip's when you're trying to tear down someone else. That goes with if I can't have what you have, then I'm going to try to talk you down so that you come down to my level. You try to tear them down. You slander them. You try to take them out. Next one I'm calling malicious joy. And this is when someone is happy when someone else is hurt. When you see someone that you're envious of suffering, you smile a little bit. It makes you a little bit happy. Eventually, what envy will lead into is hatred, which goes right back into the wrath. A lot of these are connected. And so when you're thinking about what you're struggling with, you could be struggling with envy that is working its way into wrath at this point. And so we need to be aware of that. Envy is something we have to really watch when someone else hurts us, I think, or when our life isn't going the way we think it should be. We can look at that other person and say, I wish they were suffering to the level that I am. And so with greed and envy, I think the answer to both of them is to learn to be content with what God has given us. Because God has blessed us. God is good to us. And listen, if God wanted you to have something, it would work out for you to have it. And if God doesn't want you to have something, sometimes the struggles you're facing is a sign that, hey, I need to back off. Isaiah 5, 11 through 12, we're going to move to the next one. Woe to those who rise early in the morning in pursuit of beer, who linger into the evening inflamed by wine. At their feasts they have lyre, harp, tambourine, flute, and wine. And then I'm going to read verse 22 as well. Woe to those who are heroes at drinking wine, who are champions at pouring beer. So he's saying how terrible it is for those who rise early in pursuit of beer and who linger into the evening inflamed by wine. What's happening here is these people are consuming too much alcohol and it is unhealthy for them. In fact, that first in verse 11, it says, woe to those who rise early in the morning to pursue it. They're waking up because they want it so badly. They can't wait to get started drinking that they are waking up. We would call someone to that level having a addiction to alcohol. Alcoholism. And so that was, to me, this is scripture recognizing that that's was a problem even back then. In verse 12, it says, at their feast, they have lyre, harp, tambourine, flute, and wine. Now, none of that is wrong to have for a celebration or for a feast. But what God is saying here is that this has become their focus. They have become too focused on their pursuit of things to consume. So let's talk about when sin, we probably all struggle with, in gluttony. Gluttony. Gluttony is I want more consumption. I want more things to consume. Obviously, we think about gluttony when it comes to food. It applies to drink. It applies to alcohol. It applies to more things than just food and drink. It's about you consuming more than you really need. And we've obviously done studies. There's a lot of connection between eating and drinking and pleasure. Like it activates those parts of your brain. And so that's one reason why people stress eat is because they need that relief. And so they eat. Gluttony is when we're doing too much of that. And so here's some sins and consequences. And I'm using consequences here because some of these are not a sin in themselves. But here's some consequences or fruit that can come from the branch of gluttony. First is addiction. We've already kind of hit on it. If you can be addicted to food just as much as you can be addicted to alcohol, just as much as you can be addicted to drugs, just as much as you can be addicted to anything. You can be addicted to food. And so gluttony is, hey, I want more than I really need. And as we know today that when you eat too much, you have health issues. You're a little more gassy than you should be the next 24 hours. Outside of that, once that builds time over time over time over time, you start having major health problems as you get later on in life. One of the best things you can do for your family is to take care of your body so that they don't have to take care of you later. Gluttony is, for some reason, a sin we don't talk about in the church very much, probably because a lot of pastors, including myself, are guilty of gluttony. But I would say some pastors are more guilty of gluttony than others. Gluttony is a sin that produces addiction, health issues, financial struggles. Have you seen how much alcohol costs? Have you seen how much food costs? I mean, my goodness. You keep eating out all the time, you're spending a whole bunch of money. And then this one, and I put these on here. These are not sins. These are just consequences, including this one. It's low self-esteem. When you are committing the sin of gluttony, often low self-esteem goes along with it. Now, for being real here, we all struggle with gluttony. We all eat a little bit more than we should have. On our way back from Lazy Five yesterday, we went to Culver's. I don't know if you've ever been to Culver's, but it is delicious. And I had my ice cream most of Elijah's ice cream and most of Ezra's ice cream. And so I was very guilty of it, but I went to the gym for an hour and 30 minutes to try to work it off last night. So I tried to balance it. We all have to eat, but we don't need to eat more than we need. That is a sin, and we need to be aware of that. One that I want to put along with this one, it's not necessarily listed here in Isaiah chapter 5, but it goes along with the pleasure piece, and that is lust. Lust is us saying we want more pleasure. Lust is often applied when it comes to sexual pleasure. But you can lust over things as well, but we're specifically going to apply it to sexual pleasure. Sexual pleasure, and really any pleasure, is right in certain contexts. But lust is this desire for pleasure to the point that you're willing to find that pleasure outside of God's framework. So God's framework would be that we receive sexual pleasure through a marriage. Lust is when you are trying to feel that outside of that proper framework. And the sin of lust is openly celebrated in our nation today, in our culture. And our commercials, our movies, I mean, there's all types of opportunities to lust. And it's no surprise we're seeing some of the fruit that comes from the branch of lust. Let's talk about some of that fruit. First is objectification, where you view other people as objects of your pleasure. This can happen both ways, but oftentimes it happens with women. They are viewed as objects for the pleasure of men. And that shows up in the way that people talk about women. That shows up in even sex trade. I mean, the women are literally objects that are being bid on and sold. Another fruit that comes from lust would be pornography. That pornography is a major issue in our culture. I wish the United States government would do something about pornography, banning it or something. And I know that there has been some talk about that, but I don't think there's been enough talk about that. Next would be sexual exploitation. We have the Invictus Task Force here in Randolph County in the areas, and they target those who are exploiting especially minors, I think in particular minors, sexually. I heard a story this past week of someone whose son had been exploited sexually. And so that's something that is coming from this lust, this desire for pleasure. And then obviously the last one would be unfaithfulness. Adultery is a fruit of lust. In this context of this passage, like I said earlier, gluttony is this desire for pleasure from the mouth, you know, like for you to consume. Lust is a desire for more pleasure. So you could relate those to some degree, but when they created this list, gluttony was separate from lust, and so lust we applied more sexually, gluttony we provide, we use more in terms of what you consume, eat, or drink. Let's do Isaiah 5:12, second half of that verse. It says, they do not perceive the Lord's actions, and they do not see the work of his hands. So this is right after talking about those who are partying, who are at their feast with the lyre, the harp, the tambourine, the flute, and the wine. He finishes that verse by saying, they don't perceive the Lord's actions. They do not see the work of his hands. Why? Because they are so focused on getting their pleasure in. They're so focused on their partying. They're so focused on basically trying to please themselves and trying to make themselves happy that they don't see what the Lord is doing. They don't see the work of his hands. They develop this attitude that they simply don't care about what God is up to. And that goes along with the sin of what's called sloth or slothfulness. Sloth is when someone says, I don't care. They don't care about their spiritual walk. They don't care about God. They don't care about others. They care about themselves. Sometimes people who are struggling with this sin are one of the groups that I think is hardest to minister to, because they are either here for one of two reasons. One, they just don't care. I mean, they just literally just don't care. But sometimes they're there because life has been so hard on them that they've had to switch their feelings off, and they just feel so beat down, they say, what's the point? And in that case, I have some compassion for them. Yet it doesn't change the fact that this sin can lead into bigger sins and can really hurt your life. Let's talk about some of the fruit that comes from that. First would be spiritual apathy. You just don't care about your spiritual life. You're not growing in your spiritual life. You're just sort of existing. How about neglect of prayer and responsibilities? You don't pray. You don't read your Bible. You don't tithe. You don't do anything in regards to your walk with God. Laziness. Often slothfulness makes its way not only spiritually, but also in their workplace. They'd rather sit at home, lay in bed, play video games, whatever it may be, than get out and do, be a meaningful part of society. And then this one's sort of the definition of slothfulness, is indifference. You're just indifferent to the world. You're indifferent to God. You're indifferent to people. You're indifferent to everything. Like I said, I think this is one of the most dangerous ones to suffer from, actually, because it's so hard to get out of. Sometimes you don't even realize you're in it. Sometimes you realize you're in it and you want to get out of it, but there's so much discouragement, there's so much depression, and really despair, that it's just hard for you to get up and get out. Best way to describe it, I think about someone that's struggling with depression. If you ever struggle with depression, sometimes it's hard to just get out of bed. This person that is struggling with slothfulness, it's hard for them to get out of bed when it comes to their spiritual life. And sometimes they don't even realize that they're not doing what they should be doing. So slothfulness, it can lead into a slow falling away from God that creates a lot of issues in your life. Let's skip down to verses 20 and 21, and tell me if this doesn't sound like the United States of America. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who consider themselves wise and judge themselves clever. Woe to those. What trouble is in store for those who call evil good and good evil, who call light darkness and darkness light, who call sweet bitter and bitter sweet. They get things mixed up. They clearly don't know the truth. And man, aren't we seeing that in our time? Who would have thought 20 years ago that in 2026 we would be debating on how many genders there are? Even 10 years ago, I wouldn't have guessed that. Like, my goodness, I think I heard someone say that they have, they had listed 70-something genders or something like that. Just ridiculous, ridiculous stuff. We have groups that are promoting things that are clearly, just looking at anatomy doesn't work, and yet that is being promoted. And so here, the very last verse says, woe to those who consider themselves wise and judge themselves clever. You probably know what this last one is, and it is going to be pride. Pride is, I know better. Traditionally, this has been viewed as the queen of sins. If I was making the list, this probably wouldn't have made the list because I think pride runs underneath all of it to some degree. But pride is when someone elevates themselves to where only God is supposed to sit in their lives. And pride, some of the fruit of pride, you've seen it. Self-righteousness is one. Hey, I'm right, you're wrong. Look at how holy I am. I don't sin. I don't mess up. I am so amazing. Stubbornness. You can tell them they are wrong, and you can show them they are wrong, and they still think they're right. It's frustrating. Boasting. They're willing to brag about what they're thinking and what they're doing and whatever it may be. And then judgmentalism. They look down on little lowly people like you because they know better. Pride is running around in our world like crazy. There's even a movement that is proudly called pride. Appropriate, but proudly called pride is a sign that maybe you shouldn't have that much pride. Pride is a root of all sins to some degree, but yet it's something we have to watch out for. So, you look at the seven deadly sins. Wrath, greed. If I go to the next. Wrath, greed, envy, gluttony, lust, sloth, and pride. If you look, if you're like me, you look at all these and you can say that you've struggled with them all at some point in your life. And at this present moment in your life, you probably realize there are some branches growing that should not be growing. They might be full-blown branches. They might be little things starting to come out. But you realize that one of these and the branch that they represent is beginning to stick their ugly head out in your life again. I think it's important that we examine our own lives and we see, where am I struggling? If it's wrath, if it's anger, maybe I need to learn to be more patient and calm. If it is greed, maybe I need to give more. If it's envy, maybe I need to learn to be more content. If it's gluttony, maybe I need to back off on eating, control, practice self-control. If it's lust, maybe I need to win those small battles. Jesus said, even if you look at another woman with lust, that you've committed adultery with her in your eyes. Hey, win that battle. Don't look. Slothfulness. If you realize, hey, I've kind of become indifferent in my spiritual life. It's kind of blah. I need to get up and move. I need to get up and do more. Or if it's pride, you need to humble yourselves. We need to examine our own lives to see which one are we struggling with. Because if we can identify it, we can battle it. If we can identify it, we can ask God, God, I'm struggling with envy. Help me. God, I'm struggling with gluttony. Help me. God, I'm struggling with wrath. Help me. Help me to get rid of this. Help me to cut this branch off before it ever becomes an issue. We're going to give you the opportunity to do that in a symbolic way today. So Mark, you can go and get it. So worship team, you can come on up too. I was thinking of how to end, and my mind went multiple different directions, but what I ended up settling with is we are going to bring a what was actually a trunk of a tree in here. Mark's bringing it right now. It's a small tree, so it looks more like a branch. And it's about 9 foot long. Wes cut it up for us. And he's going to lay it up here. Yeah, hit Randy real good with it. Knock some sense into him. And what I'm going to invite you to do, apparently this is called grafting, but I figure no one cared about that. But Elizabeth cared about it. I am going to leave these Sharpies up here. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to examine your life and say, hey, I've got the sin of envy, the branch of envy, beginning to grow. And symbolically, I mean, this just coming up here is not going to do anything. But if you come up here and you mean it, and you ask God, cut this off from my life, I'm putting it on this. You're going to write which one of these you're struggling with. Say, now, I'm cutting that off of me and putting that on that. And you know what we're going to do with this afterwards? It's going to be thrown right back out there in the woods. Listen, I brought a chainsaw because I was going to cut it up. But I figured I better not do that in here. Because knowing my luck, I'd cut myself or I'd cut the floor or something. But I was going to have a chainsaw up here and cut it up. But also, you'd be here a little late probably. But I want us to take a few moments here before, I think you're leading this, Lisa. Take a few moments here before and in silence, I want you to pray and say, God, which one of these am I struggling with? God, which one of these is starting to show up in my life? Which one of these branches are here? And then as we sing this last song about how we need God, how we come to God, we confess, we need His grace. Take it off of your tree, put it on this one. Cut that branch off and say, God, I'm leaving it here. If you need to take some time to pray, to seek Him, take that time. But get it off of you. You don't want these things producing fruit in your life because it's going to mess up your life and hurt others. Cut it off. Put it here.